Boy, if you don't play air guitar when that theme is running, I guess you just don't like rock and roll. We are the Right Balance. Greg Allen here. Every Thursday at this time, we welcome aboard a gentleman who's probably the analyst's analyst when it comes to the bad guys of the world, Dr. Waleed Faris. Waleed, welcome back as always.
Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
As it relates to what's going on in the Middle East right now, Hezbollah, Syria, Iran, things related, what's on your radar screen at the moment?
Well, of course, the situation developing in Lebanon seems to be one of the most dangerous evolution in what I could coin today, the rise of the Syrian-Iranian Hezbollah axis, which after the action by Hezbollah over the past months or so, by entering West Beirut, part of the Lebanese capital, trying to subdue part of the Lebanese mountain where the Druze community lives. And after the fact that Hezbollah has been able to score political victories as a result of these military action, then now what we're seeing happening in Beirut is a stalemate whereby the parliamentary majority, the Cedars Revolution, if you wish, is trying to form a government where Hezbollah will have to have 11 seats, that is 11 seats, and Hezbollah will be able to have a veto power over decisions. Now, guess what? One of these decisions will have to do with the disarming of Hezbollah. So it's a catch-22. And at this point in time, it is going to be very difficult, even for the Lebanese parliamentary majority, to achieve any significant strategic victory or defeat of terror in Lebanon, because after the Doha agreements, which took place a few weeks ago in the state of Qatar under the auspices of the Arab League, unfortunately, Qatar and the other Arab countries did not take into consideration that by bringing Hezbollah and the Lebanese cabinet under Senora at the time, equally at the table, they were recognizing the existence of the weapons of Hezbollah, and therefore they were basically contradicting the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1559, which since 2004 has been calling for the disarming of Hezbollah. So the bottom line is that in Lebanon, now we are witnessing a victory, a strategic victory for Hezbollah, but it is limited. It's not going to be for a longer period of time. It will all depend on what the United States and the rest of the international community would do before the elections next November, and of course after that in 2009.
Is there enough will among the governments in the Middle East? Now, I'm not talking about the United States. I'm talking the governments that are actually there in that part of the world, the Egypts, the Jordans, the Saudi Arabias, and others. Is there any real will to really improve things so that the Hezbollahs, Hamas, and others don't just destroy that region? It would seem to me that Egypt and Jordan, for example, and Saudi Arabia as well, would actually lose more by not speaking up and defending a more reasonable world. I know that might sound naive to some, but I think in the long run it's to their benefit not to have things fall apart in the long run.
That is true, Greg, but they are paying the price of years and years and decades of, you know, towing the line of radical attitude, even if they have not done much about it. I mean, Hezbollah, continuous line for wars and terror against the West, against democracies, against people in the region who simply want freedom and pluralism. Those governments, because they have let this happen for so long, their media has been penetrated by radical elements. Their bureaucracies have been penetrated as well. You have also in their educational system, you're speaking about Egypt, speaking about Saudi Arabia and other countries that are moderate. The governments are moderate in general terms, but the classroom is not. So now that Hezbollah has been showing its teeth, backed by Syria and Iran, then of course these Arab moderates would want to see Hezbollah being contained, if you wish, but they don't have the means. I mean, they're not going to be in the front lines. They have supported the Cedars Revolution when it took place. So what we understand from this is that when native population, the public, rises, moderates will support them, eventually the international community would support the whole, the moderates and these civil societies. But to have either these Arab governments go in the front line or having the international community go also in the front line without having societies taking the matter into their own hands and rising against terror, it's not going to work. That's why the Syria's revolution was really unique, Greg. Unlike in Afghanistan, where the U.S. had to remove the Taliban with its own military might, in Iraq, Saddam was removed by also international intervention. In Lebanon, I remind you, well, of course, there was Resolution 1559 by the Security Council, but the teeth were the actual 1.5 million Lebanese people who, without no-fly zones, without boots on the ground, without dollars spent on them, were able to demonstrate, and they were recognized by the international community. So it's going to boil down to this again, probably to a second Syria's revolution in Lebanon, to the rise of democracy in Iraq and Afghanistan and the other parts of the Arab world.
Well, let's talk about Iran, but first we've got to cut away for this message or two. We're speaking of Dr. Waleed Faris. His newer book is The Confrontation, Winning the War Against Future Jihad. Welcome back to The Right Balance. Greg Allen here. We're speaking with Dr. Waleed Faris. You see him frequently on Fox. He represents the American point of view, if you will, frequently with Arab media, so on and so forth. Waleed, the other day with another guest, we were talking about Iran. We were talking about the EU, the United States, financial sanctions and things related. Unless if I'm wrong, it seems that the Europeans are maybe beginning to get it a little bit when it comes to Iran, or am I being naive or too optimistic?
Well, somewhere in the middle, Greg. On the one hand, their national security apparatus, defense systems have begun to understand that if Ahmadinejad regime would obtain these weapons, I mean, would complete the establishment of these weapons, what is dangerous about these weapons is, first of all, of course, they are doomsday devices. We talk about nukes, but also biochemical. But more important for the Europeans, probably less than for the Americans for now, is the range of the missiles that the Iranian regime can afford. Nowadays, I mean today, Iranian long-range missiles cover all of Europe with the exception of northern Scandinavia and Iceland. So Paris, London, Rome, Spain, of course, all of Eastern Europe are under the range of Iranian missiles, and that is no joke. So the governments know about that threat. Their problem has been and is their public. And here the war of ideas comes again as a very important tool in the war on terror, because over the past 20, 30 years, the academic, intellectual, media elites in Europe have been looking at Hezbollah and the Syrian regime and the Iranian regime with a favorable eye, saying that these are representatives of their nations, which is not the case. We know the strength of the Lebanese opposition to Hezbollah, the Syrian reformers, the Iranian opposition as well. But that was not what professors and journalists, I was on France 24 last week, and I had to contend with British and American professors who were teaching in Western Europe, who were saying that, those movements are representative of the Middle East. And I said, what about the dissidents? What about the democracy movement, so on and so forth? So the bottom line here, Greg, is that Western European government, let me say European government, will have, first of all, to educate and inform their own public about the very nature of these regimes. Because one thing if Britain has nukes, another thing if Iran under Ahmadinejad has nukes, one thing if India has nukes, even though all the risks that would imply on the one hand, or let's say Libya or the Afghani Taliban regime. So that is where the Europeans stand now. And I think that with time there will be a escalation of awareness, meaning an increase of the understanding by the Europeans, but it's going to take time. And what is very dangerous in this whole game is time. They don't have much time on their hands.
What do you do if you live in Israel and you're looking at Iran and you're looking at Syria and you're getting rockets fired at nursery schools on a regular basis? What do they do in the short term right now?
Look, this is no game. If we're talking about nukes, if we're talking about these strategic weapons, anywhere you are in the Middle East, any clash of the kind, nuclear or biochemical, the Middle East is you know, a significant region, but between Iran and Israel, for example, or Lebanon or Jordan, it's the distance within Europe between 34 countries. So everybody will be affected. There is no game out there. So that if a crazy radical regime would think that by blasting a nuke somewhere in the region, they would, you know, contain or they would take a big victory, not at all, because the fallout would be catastrophic. Now, with regard to the Arab-Israeli conflict, it is very clear now that while the mainstream Arab governments, with all what you can criticize in their policies, and the Palestinian Authority, in a way, they want to negotiate a deal with Israel and with the United States. But those who are trying to sink any deal to solve the Arab-Israeli conflict are those who are funded and supported by two regimes. I mean, you don't need to be a Middle East expert. It's the Iranian regime and it's the Syrian regime by funding Hezbollah, Hamas. They don't want any stability in the region, let alone
peace. Well, the music says we're simply out of time. As always, thank you for another visit to The Right Balance. Folks, please read his book, The Confrontation, back after these messages.